So I dropped the show the last part of September on the process of impeachment. And it's funny because now that the Republicans have taken to arguing about the process of impeachment, I have a lot of people coming up asking me what I think about the process of this impeachment. And so rather than do another show, as some people have suggested, are going back into the argument in a different light, what we've decided to do is just drop the show that we did on the process of impeachment. The substance of the argument is weak. The Constitution says that the process of impeachment will be whatever Congress says it will be. And whatever Congress says is fair is fair. The reason why the Democrats have the ability to unilaterally make the decisions that they've made is because over the past few decades, the power of the minority party has been stripped from the minority party by those in the majority when they've had the opportunity to strip those powers, because they didn't want to deal with a powerful minority. So now you have a situation where the Republicans are in the minority and the Democrats are moving forward. But everything that the Democrats are doing is legal. They're not barring anybody from the rooms. The Republicans have had access to the same information that the Democrats have had access to, provided that they were on the Intelligence Committee, the same as the Democrats. Every Democrat couldn't just go in the room and be a part of the closed door meetings. You had to be a part of this committee. So, with that being said, this show that I did the last half of September, it went over the process of impeachment, what the Constitution says, why it says what it says, and how it was interpreted by the founders. Going into Federalist Paper 65, that was pretty much all about why the process for impeachment was made the way it was made. So, tune in. I hope you enjoy yourself. I hope it answers some of the questions that I've been seeing and that I've been hearing from, and I hope that you enjoy it. Scandal after scandal, through broken laws, rules, norms, and traditions, Donald Trump's presidency has seemed unassailable. The Republican Party has been overtaken by an extreme wing of alt-righters that are dead set on defending Trump regardless of what he does. The Democratic Party has been at war with itself, and the far left fights with the moderate and conservative left on how to deal with Trump, creating a disunified front incapable of doing anything. With all of that going on, Trump has managed to reshape the judicial and executive branches of government into extensions of his will by filling them with partisan persons and going around the official appointment channels wherever possible. Surviving campaign finance issues, lying to the media and the public, instructing others to lie under oath to Congress, interfering in multiple investigations, potentially using pardons as a political tool, and encouraging other countries to interfere in U.S. elections, his presidency faces a new challenge that has people seriously talking about impeachment: pressuring the Ukraine to investigate the son of a political opponent. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we're going to be talking about impeachment.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to another episode of Lessons from the Screen. You already know what it is. This is the show where we waste our brain power and our time and our energy analyzing information to give you an idea of whether or not it's something you should give your brain power, your energy, and your time to. You're welcome. So, PacSync, go ahead, support them, because they sponsor this show. And I say the same thing every week. I'm trying to flip it around a little bit so it doesn't get too stale. But go ahead and head over to www.pactsinc.org. That's PacSync.org. They are a black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life of black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. And they are the sponsor of this show, as well as one of the sponsors to the Freedom Train Network. So go ahead and show them love, because they're showing you love. Become a member, tell a friend, make a donation, volunteer, take a survey, read a book in the reading center, listen to lectures, speeches, whatever. Just get involved. And now let's jump right on into this thing about impeachment. So there's a lot to clarify and run through here, and that is essentially what this show is about. We're not going to be getting into what Trump did or didn't do, because that's going to be hashed out for the remainder of his presidency, and everybody is going to be talking about it. Literally, you're not going to be able to get away from it. So I don't want to join that chorus of people that is just going to be rehashing facts and speculating and making guesses about what's coming next. What I think is most important right now is that people thoroughly understand the process of impeachment, the process of what's happening. What stage are we at now? What's going to happen next? Why are we at this stage? Why was this whole process outlined in this fashion? That is, in my opinion, most critical to understanding why we're here and how we're going to move forward from being here. And that begins with understanding that it is a process. Impeachment is a process. It is not the simple act of removing someone from office. It is a process of bringing charges against an official that could result in removal from office and potentially barring them from holding any future offices. Now, the impeachment proceedings are not criminal proceedings, but a criminal proceeding could follow an impeachment proceeding, especially if criminal activity is uncovered during the impeachment process, or if criminal activity is the cause of the impeachment process. The goal of an impeachment process is to display the facts of a particular situation and to determine whether those facts present an issue grave enough to warrant removal from office. This also isn't something that is restricted to presidents. Of the 17 impeachment proceedings voted on by the House and the 19 officials impeached by the House, only two were for a president. The remainder were for judges, a member of Congress, and a cabinet secretary. Impeachment is also not a federal process only. States have their own rules and regulations surrounding impeachment proceedings for locally elected officials. Now, impeachment power is granted to the House of Representatives by Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5 of the Constitution, which says the House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment. This constitutional clause has been interpreted to mean that the House of Representatives is the only governmental body on the federal level that can determine what an impeachable offense is. And since 1789, there have been 62 impeachment proceedings started. But as mentioned earlier, only 17 led to a vote, with 19 officials being impeached. Trial of the impeachment power is granted to the Senate by Article 1, Section 3, Clauses 6 and 7, which say the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of 2/3 of the members present. Clause 7 goes on to say judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal of office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. Now, Clause 6 gives the power to try impeachment charges successfully brought by the House of Representatives to the Senate. It also details the procedures for the trial, enlisting the Chief Justice to preside over the Senate trial when the President is being impeached. This clause has been interpreted as giving the Senate sole power to determine what is fair and adequate in terms of an impeachment trial. It also details the requirements for convicting to be 2/3 or 67 senators as being needed to convict. The power to try and convict on successful charges brought by the House was an attempt by framers of the Constitution to ensure that the process was measured and fair. The Senate is supposed to be the upper branch of Congress, the more stable and protracted of the two bodies of Congress. This is why the requirements for becoming a senator are higher than those for becoming a member of the House. It was believed that by making senators older and more experienced, it would give them a level of wisdom that members of the House would not have. It was also believed that making senators serve 6 years instead of the two served by members of the House, it would create distance between them and the ever-changing whims of the public. Now, these two things combined were supposed to work together to create a body of Congress that was more deliberate in its actions and thoughtful in its planning. And deliberate and thoughtful are what you want when considering something as impactful as impeachment. The requirement that they are on oath or affirmation was another requirement meant to impress upon them the severity of the proceedings. The Chief Justice presiding over the trial also shows the severity of the proceedings and prevents a vice president who normally oversees the Senate from potentially using the process to take control of the presidency. The two-thirds supermajority was meant to remove the possibility of party line convictions. Of the 19 federal officials impeached by the House, only 7 were convicted by the Senate. So out of the 62 impeachment proceedings launched by the House, only 7 have resulted in removal, with 1 causing a resignation of a president. Clause 7 states that officials convicted by the Senate will be removed from office and potentially barred from future offices. No other action can be taken for conviction of impeachment by the Senate. However, it also says that criminal trials for criminal activity can still be started after a conviction by the Senate for impeachment. So if an official commits a crime, impeachment does not block further criminal charges from being brought, meaning it isn't necessarily a punitive or rehabilitative action, more of a measure to ensure the integrity of the government. Article 2, Section 4 lays out who and for what reasons someone can be impeached. It says, "The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors." This lays out that all civil officers of the United States can and should be removed from office for treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. It also cements the rule that an official that has been charged in the House and convicted in the Senate will be removed from office. Now, when it comes to who can be impeached, the Constitution leaves it as the president, vice president, and all civil officers. It does not clarify who or what qualifies as a civil officer, but this has been interpreted to mean federal judges, the president, and any appointees in the executive branch that are a principal officer. Cabinet members, department heads, administrators, and some commissioners all apply, and the vice president. Federal employees are not subject to impeachment according to current interpretation being utilized, and members of Congress are also not subject to impeachment. There are other, much simpler rules in place for removing people from these positions. But when it comes to an impeachable offense, things start to get a little dicey. You see, the Constitution really shines in all its vague glory with regards to what constitutes an impeachable offense. Treason is simple enough. And so is bribery. It is the high crimes and misdemeanors portions that has been and will continue to cause endless debates from the various different interpretations of the phrase. One thing that has been confirmed repeatedly throughout history and has generally been accepted all the way up until the Trump presidency is that a crime isn't necessary for impeachment. Alexander Hamilton wrote in the Federalist Papers number 65, "A well-constituted court for the trial of impeachments is an object not more to be desired than difficult to be obtained in a government wholly elective. The subjects of its jurisdiction are those offenses which proceed from the misconduct of public men, or, in other words, from the abuse or violation of some public trust. They are of a nature which may with peculiar propriety be denominated political, as they relate chiefly to injuries done immediately to the society itself. The prosecution of them, for this reason, will seldom fail to agitate the passions of the whole community and to divide it into parties more or less friendly or inimical to the accused. In many cases, it will connect itself with the pre-existing factions and will enlist all other animosities, partialities, influence, and interest on one side or on the other,
And in such cases, there will always be the greatest danger that the decision will be regulated more by the comparative strength of parties than by the real demonstrations of innocence or guilt. Now, this passage speaks to the thought put into what would constitute an impeachment, as well as the fears of the rise of a demagogue or a political leader who plays to prejudice and bias as opposed to reasoning, which is something that was present in the minds of all that were involved in the creation of the American government. The fear that people would be divided is accepted as a reality. The fear that those divides would be centered along factional or party lines that would influence the impeachment trial is the fear that I'm speaking of in particular, because a demagogue would have passionate, emotional, and illogical support. They could create conditions that would allow the erosion of the offices of the state with no check or desire amongst the necessary numbers of people to save the nation. It was hoped that the Senate would be high-minded enough to resist such notions. On a deeper note, since some of the offenses considered when thinking about impeachment were not necessarily crimes, but more along the lines of conduct unbecoming, it was also acknowledged that the sole deciding factor of what constitutes an impeachable offense is what the House considers one. Most of the articles of impeachment drafted by the House throughout history have not included explicit violations of criminal statutes. Drunkenness, biased decisions, rude speech, contempt of Congress, and the diverting of funds, and even actions taken before getting into office or being appointed have all been grounds for impeachment in the past. Breaking a law is an impeachable offense if the House of Representatives says it is. Violating a code of conduct is an impeachable offense if the House says it is. Likewise, breaking the law is not an impeachable offense if the House says it isn't. And violating a code of conduct is not an impeachable offense if the House says it isn't. Now, the overall goal of impeachment is to remove people unfit for office. The definition of unfit was set up to be defined by the House during the time of the considerations, but there were some guidelines so as to discourage the removal of a figure you just didn't like. To that end, three categories of impeachment have been recognized, although offenses not fitting into these categories can still be brought forward should the House desire. Abusing the power of your position. Behavior that is unbecoming or dishonors your position and makes the function of your position difficult or impossible to perform, and using your office for personal gain. To that, the question has to be asked, why was the task of conducting the trial of impeachment not given to the judicial branch? The Supreme Court seems like it would be a perfect place for this task, and it seems like it would mesh well with the checks and balances system of American governance. Alexander Hamilton speaks on that issue as well in Federalist Paper number 65, and he outlined a few points that caused them to create a Senate trial system, the one that we have now. Some of them were: the Supreme Court has too few numbers, the nature of an impeachment trial is different from that of a criminal trial, and a conflict of judgment would be created if an impeachment was caused by criminal conduct. Now, with regards to the numbers issue, it was believed that because of the complex nature of what some of the charges to an impeachment could be, the complex nature not necessarily being criminal charges, but being codes of conduct or national interest charges or conduct charges in general, they felt that you needed a larger variety of perspectives than the members of the Supreme Court. And they felt like as the more people you had looking at and examining this issue, the better off the decision would be and the more accepted the decision would be amongst the populace. So in this case, having 100 senators, all who represent the actual people, they provide a larger perspective and thus a steadier hand or a better ability to analyze the complexities of an impeachment proceeding than the Supreme Court did. Now, to the second point, the nature of an impeachment trial is different from that of a criminal trial. It was believed by some that the Supreme Court, filled with people who had studied law all their lives, filled with people who have been prosecutors, who had been judges their entire lives, would struggle with understanding that this is an impeachment trial, not a criminal trial, and thus there the gray area is area that is not defined in the black and white. And so the entire culture of the trial would be different. To the third point, the conflict of interest point, it was believed that if the judicial branch and the Supreme Court were left to make a decision as to the impeachability of an offense, and that offense also potentially involved criminal aspects, the Supreme Court members of the judicial branch would feel pressure to agree with the impeachment trial and not give any respect or enough respect to new circumstances or new evidence that might arise, or even to looking at the evidence from a different perspective. So it was believed that if a Supreme Court or a member of the judicial branch said that someone was guilty of impeachment or committed something worthy of impeachment, they would then want to support the impeachment decision by also saying that they were guilty of criminal behavior and not give enough credence to the nuance that exists between the two bars of convictions. And this was an issue because the bar for convicting someone on impeachment is lower than the bar for convicting someone on criminal behavior. And that is because, again, impeachment is not a punitive action. It's not necessarily a punishment. It's a tool used to save the government, to maintain the credibility of the government, to make sure that the government is operating in the best interest of the people. A criminal trial has on its end the life and liberty of a person, the freedom of a person. And so the bar of standard that must be achieved in order to remove someone from a job is always going to be a lot lower than the bar of standard necessary in order to remove someone's freedom or remove their life from them. An independent court wasn't created for impeachments because of the cost of the endeavor and the credibility and influence issues that would be present. In order for them to have proper authority and credibility, they would need to be a full-time government agency with full-time government workers, with no other outside allegiances, which would be costly for a procedure that wasn't intended to be a common occurrence. Them being full-time workers, however, would open them up to interference and influence from other people and institutions. There would also be a potential disconnect between the office of impeachment, and that's what I'm calling it, and the people of the nation. The crafters of the Constitution decided that it wasn't beneficial to go in that direction. Now, the procedure involved in impeachments is pretty straightforward at the federal level. The House starts an impeachment inquiry to investigate the circumstances in question. After the facts have been gathered, the House must pass articles of impeachment. The articles of impeachment can be passed by a simple majority vote of those present. Once the articles of impeachment are passed, the Senate holds a trial. If the president is being tried, then the Chief Justice of the United States presides over that trial. If it is another officer that is being tried, then the president of the Senate or the vice president presides over the trial. Conviction requires a supermajority, 2/3 vote, and results in the removal of office. Now, while many have challenged the investigative powers of Congress and their authority to investigate the office of the president in particular, the Supreme Court has regularly not only confirmed the authority of Congress to investigate anyone and anything, but has also said that Congress has a duty to do so. Congress is supposed to be informing the public on the workings of the government, and investigations are critical to that role. Congress is also responsible for oversight of government operations, and investigations are also mandatory for that duty. Congressional investigations are a part of a properly functioning Congress just as much as passing legislation. And those investigations are necessary for creating and passing well-informed and effective legislation, as well as providing credible information to the public. The impeachment proceedings can be started by the articles being introduced directly on the floor by a member of the House presenting charges, or by asking one of the House committees to look into a particular matter. Now, people that aren't members of the House can also start impeachment proceedings by submitting petitions to the House. The resolutions crafted are named according to the House committee they are sent to, but they all usually end up back in the Judiciary Committee, where the charges are investigated and scrutinized. The Judiciary Committee then delivers a full report to the House with its findings, including whether or not grounds for impeachment exist and which allegations should be considered. If it believes impeachment is founded, it will draft articles of impeachment. The House will then debate the articles before voting on articles, either as a whole or individually. If any pass through a simple majority vote of those present, a resolution is sent to the Senate notifying them of the actions of the House. The House also selects a manager that will present the charges and the information behind the charges to the Senate. After receiving the notice, the Senate will adopt a resolution notifying the House that it is ready to receive the managers. After the managers deliver their report to the Senate, they return to the House to make a verbal report, another report. The Senate then proceeds to hold a trial that plays out much like a criminal trial would. Each side has the right to call witnesses and to cross-examine witnesses from the other side. The managers selected in the House serve as the prosecutors, and I got my rabbit ears up when I say that, the prosecutors. The defendant is allowed attorneys to defend them, and the Senate serve as the jury. As mentioned earlier, in cases where the president is the defendant, the Chief Justice is the presiding officer. If the president is not the defendant, the vice president or the pro tempore is the deciding or the presiding officer. And that is done because if the vice president is being impeached for whatever reason, and vice presidents back then were elected a lot differently than they are selected now. Back then there was actually a vote. But if the vice president is being impeached, it would be a huge conflict of interest for the vice president to be the presiding officer and the defendant at the same time. And thus you have the pro tempore of the Senate who fills in when the vice president is absent, and in this case, when the vice president is the defendant. Now, there are no appeals or judicial oversights to this trial. The Senate is the end-all be-all for what happens during the trial and the results of the trial. Conviction in the Senate means immediate removal from office and a possible bar from all governmental offices in the future, but nothing more. Impeachment, once again, is not a criminal trial. As such, a criminal trial can still be brought forward after impeachment proceedings, regardless of how they turn out. Now, this is the road we are now on with regards to Donald Trump and potentially some of his appointees, because they can be impeached as well. And some of them have already been held in contempt of Congress. Chances are he will not be impeached, and neither will his appointees, if history is an accurate judge. But the process is one that should be thoroughly understood, especially with regard to the place we are in now, the heightened emotionality. And people are celebrating and super excited just for us to be in this space of talking about impeachment as if the clock is counting down. Hold your horses, pump your brakes. We ain't there yet. Still got a long road to go. The process of impeachment is one that now more than ever needs to be thoroughly understood because of what it means, because of how it can change, and because of how this process could change all future processes for impeachment. With the impeachment process being started, it also now takes priority over all other matters of state. Once the inquiry is complete, all other legislative business will stop until the impeachment process is complete. And we will just have to wait and see what political impacts this has, not just on the coming 2020 election, but also on the culture of politics in America extending well into the future. And this has been another episode of Lessons from the Screen. I hope you enjoy your week, and I will see you next Saturday.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
All right, I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen right here on the Freedom Train Network. Remember to go show the Freedom Train Network some love, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Spelled just like it sounds. If you can't spell it, I don't know what to tell you. But make sure you also go ahead and check out the Freedom Train Radio app. If you got an Android, we got an app. And if you got an Android and your Android ain't got the app on it, then you ain't cool. And that's all I'm going to say about that. It's in the App Store. Search Freedom Train Radio. You'll see the logo, the Choo Choo Train, calling your name. So go ahead and get that there. Make sure you show all of the Freedom Train Radio network shows some love. Give them all a hug. Leave a comment on all of the shows that you like. And even the shows that you don't like, leave a comment still telling them you don't like them and you don't like they suck a fish fried eggs. And I also want to take more time to tell you guys to go and check out our sponsors, PACS Inc., PACTSINC.org, PACSINC.org. Show them some love. And drop a line on the Freedom Train website. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Let us know what you want to hear. Let us know what shows you think we should try to put together for you. The number one, the world's first black, pro-black podcast directory right here. You know what it is. You know what it does. And we look forward to seeing you, hearing from you, speaking with you, and sharing life with you every week. I will see you next week. This is your boy, Patrick Irvin.